I'll tell you right now that I think this is the episode I'm the most nervous for.
Welcome to Kim Moffat is a Fan. This episode, my guest this week is Rena Mimoun. And when I tell you that I am excited about it, I can't even tell you how excited I am. Rena is an exceptional writer and has written for basically me. Everything that I love, she's written for, starting with Jack and Jill, which was a great sitcom on the WB starring Amanda Peet and Sarah Paulson. She also wrote for Dawson's Creek, Everwood, Superman and Lois, Mistresses, and Girls on the Bus for Max. I had the greatest time asking her all the questions I've ever wanted to know about the shows that she's written for, the shows that I love. We had such a great time talking about different showrunners like Greg Berlanti, Dan Fogelman, Mike Schur. It's just a TV lovers episode. So please enjoy Rena Mimoun. Because I have so many questions that I don't know how to like condense this into.
I ask away. Go for it.
All right. Do you have all day for me to ask you 100,000 questions?
I don't, but I definitely have like a good hour in shape. I have like an hour for sure.
Amazing. So the first thing I've been having people do is introduce themselves on this podcast.
Oh, my name is Rena Mimoun, and I'm a writer, executive producer, showrunner, voter.
Perfect. Perfect. So I really want to talk about Girls on the Bus, but there are so many things that I would be remiss if I did not bring up. Other shows that I just adore that you've worked on, starting with, this is not a joke, I think about the show all the time. It's not streaming anywhere. It's like I made it up in a fever dream, but I know the show is real. Jack and Jill. I loved it. Rena, I loved it so much.
It's not streaming anywhere. Do you know that's so funny? I am still occasionally in touch with the creator of that show, Randy Mayhem Singer, and she is equally frustrated that you can't stream it anywhere. And I'm actually surprised because especially in light of, you know, Sarah Paulson has sort of blown up and become a big thing, and it's still Amanda Peet. Like, there's so many people, Justin Kirk. I mean, everyone is still someone I think people would want to see. And it was a fun show. I loved it. Loved it. Oh,
I'm so glad.
Yeah. I was real young at the time when I was on that show. I was closer to the age of the characters on the show. And I find that has become the biggest difference now when I write about young people. I'm like, oh, I'm no longer, that's not my life anymore. But on Jack and Jill, I remember so much being like, oh, we're all the same age. I don't look like them, but we're all the same age.
I love that though. I love like when you can relate so closely to the characters that you're working on or shows that you're working on, but then it becomes like kind of a mind shift when suddenly the characters that you're relating to are like, oh, they have kids.
Yep. Completely. Well, it's funny. I don't want to switch gears on you, but it's one of the things I talk about a lot with Everwood. Because again, when I was writing Everwood, I wasn't in high school, obviously, but I did feel more closely connected to the younger generation on that show. And I was like all into the Amy and Ephraim love story. And, you know, I was just, that was where my heart was. And I have rewatched that show now. And I'm so, I obviously feel much more connected to Dr. Brown and the pair. Like, it's just a complete switch. But I feel like that's why that show to me worked so well, because it really did speak to so many different ages and so many different people.
Yeah, that's funny. That was the next thing I was going to say is I wrote down Everwood, exceptional. Yeah. It was just so good.
Yeah, it really was. And that one, I got to say, really holds up. Because I had to rewatch it recently, and I didn't have to watch the whole thing, obviously, but I found myself getting really sucked into this time machine and going, oh, that story is still really moving, and that story actually still tracks, and there were so many pieces about it. I loved that show with all of my heart. It was really like where everything really started for me.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that because, yeah, I've rewatched it since, and I was really into it when it first aired. And then even like as you rewatch it, it's so beautiful. It's sweet.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think the way that it talks about grief is just so beautiful too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of incredible. And Greg created that. He was also quite young and hadn't gone through that level of grief in his life, not in that way. And when we had an event, it was for an upfront event. So it was quite a while ago again. But it was after he himself had just lost his mom. And so suddenly watching him talk about Everwood in relation to, it was intense to see him experiencing the show from this new age and from this new kind of loss. And he really did. He knew how to tackle grief before it hit him. And I wonder if that's helped him process it as an adult.
Yeah, that's a good point because I don't know where it, I do remember, I don't know why this like sticks out in my head so much, an interview with him around the time of Everwood when people were asking him like, but you're so young and you haven't experienced the things that you're talking about in the show. And like, what are you tapping into for that? And I don't know where that comes from because
he's an old soul.
Apparently he must be.
He's an old soul. I think he always leaned much more into hope than his counterparts who were coming up at the same time that I think were sort of always trying to find what's the edgiest, what's the noisiest, cynical is always hip. And that was just never Greg's brand. And I think in many ways, he's still, Girls on the Bus is an extension of that. You know, it's very much still leaning into a more hopeful view of the world and a little fun and,
I agree. It's interesting to watch Girls on the Bus now when we're in the middle of such a cool, neat, stress-free time.
Okay.
And you know, it's based on obviously a true story, but like that book was, we didn't even understand where we would be right now when she was writing the story of Hillary as a candidate. And but it's odd in like the best way that there is an optimism to Girls on the show now.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Well, I think Amy particularly had no interest in reliving. And I'm sorry, I've dragged you from Jack and Jill to Girls on the Bus.
This show has no, you're fine.
Go back and forth. I'm so sorry.
If you think I'm not going to bring every single episode back to Jack and Jill, you're out of your mind.
I'll totally bring it all back to Jack and Jill. I wish I had I don't think I have any Jack and Jill swag in here. Wait, do I? No, I have like a Dawson's thing that I'll show you, but that's really fun.
I'm definitely going to want to see that as well.
I think all my Jack and Jill stuff is in another room. But, no, Amy definitely did not. She was not interested in reliving her experience with 2016. And I don't think any of us were, right? It was really traumatic. And the idea really sprung not from her. Well, the initial idea was not rooted in that book, like in terms of her relationship with Hillary, as much as it was stealing from one of the chapters that was called The Girls on the Bus. That spoke about just the relationships that are formed between these mostly women who are trapped in this, it's like a bottle episode for a year and a half, basically. And the lives and the relationships and friendships and competitions and all that stuff that are formed. But when I came on board, we were trying to sort of, because to me, I was interested in the relationship that she had with Hillary in the book. And so we were like, well, if we take the Hillary piece out of it, because again, it's too traumatizing and it's too difficult, but how there is a relationship between the journalists and these candidates. And we wanted to explore how hard it must be to try to remain objective and try to not have any emotional attachments to people that you're covering 24/7. And how you're not supposed to root for them and you're not, I learned so much about political journalism that I just never would have thought of before, including the fact that Amy herself had never attended a rally, could never be seen sort of supporting one cause or another, because as a journalist, it's really her whole job is to remain neutral. Mm-hmm. And as you're pointing out, how do you remain neutral in these times? I think it's got to be, I don't know that they're succeeding, and maybe they don't need to. That's really the question of the show. Like, is that the point anymore? It's hard to know.
It is really hard to know. And I don't even know. I was just talking about, I watched Nancy Pelosi's or Katie Turr's episode or interview with Nancy Pelosi the other day. Did you see this?
I didn't.
Nancy Pelosi was talking about Donald Trump's job ratings and said worst job approval rating in history. Wow. And Katie Turr, I think, rightfully pointed out there was a pandemic. I think it would have been dishonest to not point it out. And I think it was a great opening for Nancy Pelosi to say, yes, and here's, you know, XYZ, why he could have done better with it and handled it. And right. But instead, Nancy just kind of like whipped around and was like, well, if you want to be a Donald Trump apologist, that's up to you. And I was shocked by it. And I, you know, and then I started reading how everybody was like, Katie Turr is a Donald Trump apologist. I was like, I don't think she is. But we look at journalism so differently now. Like,
I
don't know, you know.
It's that whole, like, we talked about it obsessively, and we bring it up in the pilot, and it will touch on it again in the finale, which is airing next week. But it's this whole balance of authenticity, objectivity, and what is more important, and where are journalists supposed to be living right now, especially when we have to accept the reality that all of these news outlets, they are targeting a certain audience. Mm-hmm. They just are. So news is not what it was. Just like TV is not what it was. We used to have three stations to choose from. And now I don't even know how many stations there are.
A lot.
I mean, the word station makes me sound like a dinosaur. But like, they're outlets.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And then there's the concept or the idea of branded content. Like the episode that you wrote, the second episode, there's a line where the social media reporter says branded content is the future of journalism.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting aspect to it too. And yet it's not, because like, we have commercials.
Yeah, of course. The worst thing that I remember when I first started out as a TV writer, you know, and it's so exciting and you're living your dream, and it's like you're writing stories and they're making it on TV in an actual timeline that makes sense, as opposed to now, which is like you have an idea and maybe 6 years later you get to see it on a streamer somewhere. But back then I was just so excited. And I remember someone like breaking it down for me saying, well, you know, all you're doing is selling soap. I was like, what? I am not selling soap. What are you talking about? It's like the whole reason you exist is for the ads in the middle of your little show. And so I don't even remember who said it to me, because obviously I just sort of went dead inside. Sure. I was like, I guess it's true. Art and commerce have always been closely sewn together.
Yeah. Yeah. What really draws you to television versus features?
Oh, I've always been more drawn to television. I really love the idea of ongoing stories, because I think they are, first of all, I love characters, and I love the idea of sitting down and having these characters be in my life and feeling like an extension of my world. It's friendships, it's wish fulfillment. But I like every week, again, sort of going back in time when it was every week, I had appointment television since my mom and I used to sit down in her bed with a thing of ice cream in between and watch Dallas, you know, and every week that's what we did. And then we branched out to Dallas and Dynasty, and I think Falcon Crest made its way in, but it was just like, it's similar to a novel where it's just every week you're getting a little more and a little more and a little more. Whereas movies, they're great and it's a different kind of spectacle, but they never lived with me in the same way that TV did. I don't know why. They just never, some movies of course have made more of an impact on me than others, but yeah. I don't think anything more than series television.
That's a great way to put it. That's how I think. I was just thinking about like stories that I've loved, and they've always been TV show. You know, I love movies. Yeah. There's movies that I'll go back and rewatch, but like a TV show can really like get your their little talons in you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you really start to, you just, these characters become part of your life when they're great. Right. Yeah. And that's the thing also. It's sort of characters that you can't stop thinking of and characters that you want to introduce. Even now, like, we watch a ton of comedies in the house with my son. He's now into The Walking Dead with my husband, so they've gone off into zombie land.
No thank you.
I don't go there as much. He did get me to watch Last of Us, which I admit was brilliant.
Yes.
But I can't do 100 episodes of zombies in The Walking Dead. It's not for me. But normally as a family, you know, we sit down and we'll watch. We did every family sitcom on ABC. We did every family, you know, then he got into The Office, then he got into The Good Place, and we still talk about it. Like, he just, that's, I think TV is just really powerful at its, yeah, at its best.
Yeah, I agree. The Good Place is a great example of just like, it's so good. It's funny. Yeah. It has a great, like, overall message. And then the ending, really good.
So good. It was so good. I would rewatch that in a heartbeat. There's a few series that I've like, you know, everyone picks up Friends when you're like, when you're sad, you're like, oh, let me go to season 3, season 4.
Yeah.
I used to play that game, like Misha and I would be like, just say a number and we'll just watch that episode of Friends. It just makes you feel good.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm a Mike Schur girl. So I'll just rotate between The Office, Parks and Rec, The Good Place, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
We're in Brooklyn Nine-Nine right now, and we're doing it so slowly because we ate The Office so quickly. We were just like, okay, we have to go slower with Brooklyn Nine-Nine because we're at the end of our Mike Schur experience.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. He's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very, very good. And also one of those guys who just seems nice, who likes to put good characters with good hearts out into the world.
Yes. Good hearts out into the world. I really appreciate that more and more as I see more and more TV that I feel like isn't doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm so aware when it is. And I'm so thrilled when it's also successful because it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, Fuller House, and Full House is a perfect example of just like trying to put out something kind and heartwarming. And I was so glad that it received such a success in its second, you know, on the Netflix version. I thought it was fantastic.
Me too. And it's so interesting because it clearly people want that.
Yes.
And yet we don't see it as often as, you know, we're clamoring for.
It's very hard. I wish I understood it, but I, as someone who is constantly trying to pitch new stories and sell new ideas, I do find there is a barrier. And the word that always comes back is, it feels a little soft. Feels a little soft. I'm like, don't you like soft things?
Yes.
Soft. When did soft be? I like soft sweatshirts. I like soft. Soft makes you feel good. I don't know why that's so. Something got bent somewhere along the way. And again, like I look at a show like This Is Us, which was another one of like a most recent and probably one of the last really great network shows that wasn't rooted in a procedural. You know, I love for procedurals, and I'm so happy for everyone that loves their NCIS. But like, This Is Us was one of those shows that just made you feel. Made you feel good, made you feel sad, helped you get your cry on. And why aren't we trying to get more of those? I don't know. But they're not. No one will take them.
Which is insane. So I worked on This Is Us. I worked on the last two seasons of This Is Us. And
Dan Fogelman is another perfect example of one of the kindest, smartest, most beautiful writers, and just always looking to put joy and goodness out into the world.
Yeah. Yes. And that show was such a delight to work on. And it started from Dan. There's no way that show would have been like as great as it was, and also such a great thing to work on, had Dan not just been like the prince that he is.
Yeah. Yes. He is a prince. It's true.
And I found like the last not the series finale, but the penultimate episode, which was the Rebecca going through the train and ultimately like it, her like going back through her life. My grandpa died in 2019, and then we had the pandemic, and it was just a very like, I really like sat in that grief, and like it took me a really long time to just like buck up. Like, yeah. You know,
I'm there with you right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. I didn't want to bring it down and bring it up.
But that's okay, because you don't want me to cry, and I totally okay. don't do. I don't want me to cry either.
It's I'm not going to, but I will say that, like I found that script, that episode, to be very healing, and Dan just wrote the hell out of it. I mean, he wrote the hell out of the whole show, and then cast like you wouldn't believe.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And I got to work with Justin Hartley before This Is Us. And I actually remember Dan, because I know Dan, because Scott knows Dan. And again, he is just amazing and wonderful and was a friend before. But I remember he was auditioning Justin, and Justin had just done work on Mistresses. And he called me and he's like, "What's up with this guy?" I was like, "Oh my God, he's the greatest." take him. We can't afford him anymore. I don't know if they're picking us up. Take Justin Hartley and make him super famous, because he's so, and he did.
Yeah.
And
yeah. And you're, I know that you just worked on Under the Bridge with Caitlin and Jennifer Morrison, two This Is Us tie-ins, but I didn't realize that you and Caitlin were like such good friends. Caitlin, what a, just a delightful human being.
Oh my gosh. The most delightful and stealth hilarious. I don't know if you've read her writing.
I have not.
It is so funny. It is amazing. I mean, she gave me the script, and normally, especially because it was a feature, and sometimes when you get features, you're like, settle in and maybe you'll do it in a few appointments. I burned through her script so fast. I called her. I was like, what have you done? This is hilarious. Who is making this? It's brilliant.
That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't even know our other mutual friend, Caitlin Stamos, made a comment about. I said, how's Caitlin doing? She was like, she's great. She's writing. I was like, Caitlin, I had no idea. I just knew her as like just baller actress. I didn't know that she also was a talented writer too.
I know. It's like, I know. It's the worst.
It is the worst.
Caitlin Stamos is a perfect example also. It's like, really? You have to be so nice. And so beautiful and so good. But she is.
It's rude. Let's call it what it is. It's super rude.
It's rude. I agree.
Yeah. How dare they, frankly. All right. I don't want to bring it all the way back to Dawson's Creek and Everwood.
Hold on. I'm going to show
you. But I will.
Actually, this was sort of like terrible, but I keep it up because it was funny. This was I think season 5, like one of the writer gifts. They made a lunchbox, and I can't remember. I can't remember who drew it. It's sort of dark and terribly sexist, but it's, you know, there's only 10 of them or whatever in the world. So I keep it because I'm like, it's cool. Although when my son's friends look at it, they're like, what's wrong? I'm like, it's yucky.
you had to be there.
I had to be there. It was a weird show. Yes, Dawson's. That is where I met Greg. So I went from Jack and Jill. I went from Jack and Jill to Dawson's. Boy, it was obviously in the 90s. Jack and Jill had its first season, and we didn't know if we were getting picked up. So then I met. I think it's crazy that you start to actually forget your own thing. I think Jack and Jill, we did, I think, 18 episodes in season 1. Dawson's was still going on. So I went and did Dawson's for a minute. And then I think I went back to Jack and Jill, or I met on Dawson's, but Jack and Jill got picked up, so I couldn't do Dawson's. And then I did Dawson's, and then Jack and Jill didn't get, it was like when there was a wheel on the WB.
Yeah.
Horrible term. So we were on the wheel, and then we didn't get picked up for the second half of the wheel.
Gotcha.
So I stayed on, I like scurried over to Dawson's. which is where I met Greg.
Do you remember at all if the season four of Dawson's was thought to be possibly the end of the show? Because so I just did a Dawson's Creek rewatch podcast.
Oh, wow.
We just finished a couple weeks ago, and I had seen it. I watched it as a kid. I was very emotionally invested in the Dawson Joey storyline as a kid.
Oh, yeah. Her choice changed everything, Kim.
Yes.
That was the season four tagline. And it was the only time in history, I think, a fourth season of a show got a billboard campaign again, because it was Katie and her choice changed everything was the tagline all over Los Angeles.
I did you read Billion Dollar Kiss? Are you in Billion Dollar Kiss?
I don't.
Billion Dollar Kiss is about television in general, but specifically about the way that Greg Berlanti, like in the book, they tell the story. I don't know if this is exactly how it happened, but in the book, they tell the story that they were trying to figure out what to do, how to like keep the show fresh. And in the book, it says that Greg basically went up to the whiteboard and just wrote Dawson, Joey, Pacey, and drew a triangle and was like, maybe we do that now. And that became the Billion Dollar Kiss.
I totally believe it, because Greg did have this thing where the board would be filled with words that people wrote down, filled with things. And every once in a while, Greg would come in, look at the board, and just erase all of it and write like a word. And you're sort of staring at it going, okay, but he did have a tendency to be like, everyone's gotten too big, everyone's lost the thread. It was always about like, you've lost the thread. The show always has to come back to the characters. So, and I have to imagine that was what was happening there. But yeah, no, I don't think, I can tell you this much. I didn't show up to Dawson's until season four. I came in at prom, I believe it was. Prom
big time. Episode.
So that wasn't mine. That was Maggie's. And that was the first time I went. So Maggie, I shadowed Maggie in North Carolina because my episode was following that. But I know what happened was Greg was leaving after season four, because that's when he was developing Everwood. Mm-hmm. So season five, Greg was no longer running the show. He was sort of there as a consultant, and it was Tom Kapanos and really mostly Gina Fattori, if we're being honest.
Gina's episodes were always my favorite episodes. She seems great.
She is Dawson's Creek, I will say. She's and she's incredible. But I think there was a chance that they thought the show was going to end at the end of season five.
Got you.
I think there was like that question mark, and then it got one more season, but I left. So I was only there for the end of season four and then all of season five. And in the middle of season five is when Greg shot Everwood, and he showed me the pilot, and I'll never forget that, because I was in the, he brought me into this office and sat me down next to Michael Green, who I had never met, and we're both watching the pilot side by side, and I'm sobbing. Yeah. And Michael Green keeps looking at me like, he's like, are there cameras in here or something? And I was like, how are you not crying? Who are you? What's wrong with you? And of course, he and I were both on the show together, and then I realized that's just who Michael is. And Greg then helped get me off Dawson's and onto Everwood.
Yeah.
Which was tricky.
I bet. Yeah. Had Everwood been picked up for a fifth season?
Yes. Like,
do you remember, or can you talk at all about what a fifth season of Everwood would have looked like? Because that happened, you know, there was the Into the CW, and I spent a lot of time thinking about the UPN WB Into CW merger. Yes. And have a lot of thoughts and feelings that I will keep to myself as somebody who would love to continue to be employed in this industry.
Certainly, same. I personally was devastated. We 100% thought I don't want to rewrite history. Obviously, we knew there was a possibility because we shot two endings, but we did shoot a different ending in case we got picked up. And the idea was that Amy would be outside waiting with the Ferris wheel, and Madison was back. So we brought Madison back. So we were going to, and I wish I could tell you that I remember the storyline beyond that. All I know is, our big fight in the room was, well, how long is Amy going to wait outside with the Ferris wheel if he's on the phone with Madison? And I'm like, we'll figure that out if we get picked up. We'll figure it out. But that was going to be the idea, that you end on Amy waiting and Ephraim picking up the phone and reconnecting with Madison. And so their love once again sort of ships in the night.
Oh, I'm so glad you guys shot two endings, because
yes,
what a
me too,
devastating.
I would have been, yeah, because with Jack and Jill, we didn't shoot two endings, and we had a really sad, horrible ending.
Yes.
And I felt terrible. Like, when I found it, and by that point, I was quite literally the only one who cared, which is sort of sad. Like, I was the staff writer going, how can this be? But Randy was no longer on the show. She was working on something else. The person that they had hired to take it over was like already moving. Like, no one loved it in the way that I loved it. And when we got canceled with that ending, I was like, oh, this is the worst ending ever. Like, this is terrible. Only to be the only one that's possibly worse was our mistress's ending, which was also, we had a perfect ending. Mm-hmm. And then everyone said, no, give us a cliffhanger because we want to do a season 5. I was like, okay. So we did this wonky cliffhanger that kind of killed it, because we had a beautiful little tableau that would have ended mistresses nicely. And yeah, it was rough.
That's such a bummer.
It is a bummer. But I am so relieved, especially since Everwood, especially, like, was, I always think of it as my adopted child. It was Greg's baby, and he handed it to me, you know, midway through our run. And so I felt very protective of it. And if I had somehow failed the finale, oh, I would have never forgiven myself.
No, you landed that plane very well. It's really good. That finale is really good. You know what episode I think about a lot? And truly, until today, I was like, I got to figure out exactly which episodes of Everwood you wrote. The season 1 finale. Exceptional hour of television, just in general. Very good. Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I love it. Yeah. Oh. What's so sad is when you watch them now, all the music has changed. So there were some really, like, I remember, I think we had REM. Like, we had a lot of great music on Everwood that most of it has been stripped out. So when you watch it, it's sort of like, that's not what it was.
I used to have the soundtrack somewhere, and it's actually kind of driving me crazy that I don't, because there was a song on the soundtrack called Quiet Hushed Voices that I just, I am writing this thing and wanted to include that song in it, and was like, I got to think about this song. I got to hear it one more time and, like, feel like if it's right. And I cannot find it anywhere. I can't find, like, a bootleg version on YouTube. I can't, it's not on Spotify. It's not on, it's nowhere.
I don't want to freak you out, but I'm sure I have. Well, I know I have the CD, but I wonder if I imported it. Let's see. Yeah, I have it. What's it? Which one is it called?
Quiet Hushed Voices.
Many people. Oh, it's not on the soundtrack.
Really?
Yeah.
This is a real song. I believe you.
But I'm looking at it. I mean, here, I don't know if you'll, because this you'll remember. And it's the greatest. It's our theme. Oh. It's the most beautiful. But no, we have Quiet Hushed Voices. Is that, do you mean Jump Little Children, Cathedrals? No.
No, but Cathedrals is excellent also.
Yeah, no, it is a great, you can't get the soundtrack. I do have the soundtrack, but that song is not on here, but I'm gonna look for it for you. Hold on. Did we use it?
Man.
No. There is a song, I will say this, there is a song that you can't find anywhere that was the end of our, was in the finale, the final song when they're on the Ferris wheel, called Ruins. And the reason it doesn't exist is because it was my friend who was forming a new band, and they gave us that song, and then the band never happened. So that song exists on Everwood only and nowhere else.
Wow.
It's called Ruins, and it was Inara George, and it doesn't exist anymore. It's wild.
Now I gotta look and see. I might have the DVDs, the Everwood DVDs. So.
Oh, I do. Yep, they're all in there. They're all right there. Yeah.
You know what I have on DVD though is Heart of Dixie season 1.
Oh, Dixie!
And 1 and 2.
Hey, oh, Lila will be so thrilled.
Yeah, I am. So I actually, it's very wild. I got a on a high or like trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. I had just been on my very first show ever for like 10 episodes. And then it was done. And then I had a very long period of time where I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I don't know if I can handle the stress of not having a consistent job. Guess what? Still can't. But then I was like, maybe I'll do more of the corporate side or assistant side. And so I interviewed with Julie Plec. And in the same day that I got a call saying like, Julie loves you and would love to have you come on as her like second assistant, I got a call from the Heart of Dixie production office saying like, hey, we loved you in your interview. We'd love for you to come on and be a PA. And I had like, it was such a difficult decision. Ultimately ended up going with Heart of Dixie, but it was tough. But yeah, so I was there we missed each other on Heart of Dixie just a little, by a little bit.
I was only there season 1.
Yeah. I did seasons 3 and 4. Another show where it was like, is it going to come back? We did a finale, like a proper series finale, but it was like, maybe. But
yes, I remember that. Lila didn't know. And Lila had worked really hard on another season pitch.
Yeah.
And yeah, but yeah, the industry just, it can break your heart, man.
It really can. Why did we choose this life?
I don't know. I ask myself that all the time.
I want to be like respectful of your time, even though I have 500,000 more questions. So I'm going to ask you these questions that I ask every single person that comes on the show, but I'm going to really quick. I just want to like say the name of a couple different shows because I want you to know that I love them as well. Pushing Daisies. Excellent. Privileged. So good.
Yay.
Loved Privileged. Also Superman and Lois, because I like fell in love with television when I fell in love with Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. So I liked the way that Superman and Lois was told, like that. I like that version of that story.
It was the most fun job I've had in I don't know how long. That was such a joy to just hop in. I've never done superhero. I don't know from superhero. And that room was spectacular. One of the best rooms I've ever sat in on. It was awesome. I loved
it. That's amazing. What do you think about it was so special?
You know, Todd Helbing, who created it, really came at it from, first of all, everyone in that room loved Superman. Like, I mean, loved Superman in a way that I don't relate to superheroes in that way because I didn't grow up on superheroes. And so I would sort of pitch stories and it was really funny because everyone was always quite nice, but they said, Rena, that Lois, that's not Lois. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. They were like, Lois just can't, that's just not ever something Lois would do, ever, ever, ever. So I was like, okay, so I won't pitch my abortion storyline for Superman and Lois because Lois is not having an abortion. I totally get it. You can't abort a possible superhero. Fair. Fair.
I mean, but she should have the choice, though. She should have the choice.
But no, and I think Todd also, he has 2 boys. So it was for a show that ultimately, of course, was rooted in this superhero mythology and a love of that mythology. It also very much came from both Todd and the other executive producer on the show, Brent Fletcher, who came from Friday Night Lights. There, you know, it was a lot about family and a lot of those stories were sort of rooted in fatherhood and they're both, you know, wonderful fathers. And that was a big piece. I really enjoyed that because you don't get a lot of fatherhood stories. And I thought that was a really, and there was another writer on the show, Mike Narducci, like there were all these great dads on the show. And I loved how much they wanted to tell stories about being dads because that is rare. And I really appreciated it. I had a great time. It was much, much, much fun.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, that is true. We really don't get a lot of like, unless it's, you know, the dad left. Or the dad's got to work through their own issues before they can parent.
Yeah. No, exactly. These were like, all these guys were really awesome co-parents in real life and trying to put that out on screen without it feeling like, this is a funny story about a dad who has a baby Bjorn. It's like, no, these are dads. they're working really hard.
That's cool. I like that. I like that a lot. And then the last, to go back to Girls on the Bus, as we're talking about, you wanted to pitch a Lois abortion storyline. I think it was interesting to watch the episode 8 of Girls on the Bus that is one of the storylines is about trying to get the abortion medication and everything that comes with it. But I thought what was most interesting about it is that that's just one of the storylines, mm-hmm. because that's just like a part of, it's not her entire, for some, yeah. you know, it, for her in that moment, that's just what's a part of what's happening.
Yep, exactly. You've got it exactly right. And she has a million other things going on. And in many ways, like the frustration that she was feeling is she had to get back to all the other things in her life. And this was becoming an obstacle and the helplessness that she was feeling simply because it wasn't available to her because her choices have, our choices have been diminished and made more and more, smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. But no, I loved that too. And in fact, the truth is, which I don't like to admit, but in that particular episode, that storyline isn't even my favorite storyline. I loved the Grace and her father. Like that to me was such a, and I thought Carla was so incredible.
Yes.
And in, she just broke my heart. And in any other version of television, like that would have been the highlighted piece. But I'm thrilled that people sort of took note of the abortion storyline because it is so, it's just, I feel like we just have to keep telling them over and over and over. Yeah.
I agree. And telling them in that way, I mean, I understand that there is like a time and a place for making it the entire episode and making it very heavy and stuff, but that's not how it is for in every single abortion. Like everybody's abortion is their own story in the way that our lives are our own lives. And I think telling it the way that you did, like, because we are in this moment that we are in, making that story accessible to everybody is probably gonna save lives. Like, let's just, you know, we're at a really deadly and dangerous point in history. Yeah. Something like that, probably life-saving.
I hope so. I mean, it's funny. There was the year Unpregnant came out on Max, which was this real, it's sort of inspired a little bit by Unpregnant because it was just sort of a road trip. It was like a buddy comedy that was ultimately on the road to get an abortion.
Yeah.
And at the same time that came out, the independent film Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, which took a much
I still haven't seen it.
Very wonderfully told, but just the polar opposite, right? It was very dark. It was all consuming. It was painful to watch. But I thought, great that these two things are coming out the same year, the same time, and just showing it's healthcare, but really it's women's stories that I'm always going to say more women's stories always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had our time.
We're good.
All right. So these are the questions that I ask every single person on every single episode. Do you know the first question has a 0% success rate, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. Okay. Do you know what a horcrux is?
What a horcrux?
0% no. success rate continues. Okay. In Harry Potter, the bad guy is able to split his soul into technically 8, but really 7 pieces on purpose so that he can like live on forever.
Oh, wow.
If you were to do this in a positive way, if you were to split your soul into 7 pieces so that a part of you could live on forever.
Oh.
They could be a moment in time. They can be a specific place. They can be a person. They can be an idea. Whatever. It's a made up book turned into a made up game on a podcast.
Okay. Where would I go? Or
what would be like the 7 places that you would put a little bit of your soul so that you could live on forever?
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm misunderstanding the question. Because all I can think of is I really want my soul to be with my mom right now. So I sort of want to hang out with her forever. And that's a big one.
Yeah.
I can't think of 6. I mean, I want to I just keep thinking of people that I want to be with, but I feel like that's the wrong way.
There's no wrong way to answer this question. There's no wrong way to answer this.
I mean, I'd want to see, I'd want to make sure that I'm living in my son. I'd want to make sure, like, it's, you know what? It's all, there's going to be family. All of the things that are important to me, I think, come down to my family and those people in my life and those people that I miss. I mean, as I'm looking at you, I look up and it's all, there's privileged over there. There's everyone over here. And then right in the middle is my millions of pictures of my mom and my grandma, and my grandpa, and all the people that I miss all the time. And that's, I think if I could just split my soul right now, I'd want to go hang out with all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I think that's a perfect answer.
Okay.
I'll give you one that's less serious now. What is your most used GIF?
GIF. Oh, there's like a really, my friend just gave it to me and it's like this really messed up Barbie. Just looks like, it's just like a really destroyed Barbie that I enjoy because it makes me laugh. And that's how I feel most of the time, like a Barbie who's been, and this was actually pre-Barbie the movie. It was, it's very funny.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that answer. I'm going to clarify a little bit. I think you heard gift, like present.
Like no, gift. GIF.
A you GIF. There's a messed up Barbie GIF?
Oh, yeah. My friend sends it to me all the time. And now we just send it back and forth to each other. It's just like this Barbie who like looks like she's been smushed like on acid. She just looks like a woman destroyed. And it's how I feel often. So.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. No, it is that. It is
that's awesome.
If I find it, I'll send it to you.
Yes, please do. What is something you will never change your mind about?
Pro-choice.
Yeah. What is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Take your ego out of it.
I like that. Who gave you that?
Greg.
Classic Greg.
Classic Greg. Yeah.
What is your favorite picture?
My favorite picture. Oh, gosh. I feel like I'm looking at a couple of them. There's this great shot of my mom. I'd be right. I'm sure it's changed. I'm sure when Misha was born, I had like 9 million. I do have a really great picture of Misha as a baby. It might be that. I think I should go with that. It's real cute. It's just him and he's surrounded by all these, like, we used to make this little ball tent for him in the house. And so it's just, Scott took the picture and it's incredible. It looks like it should be one of those iPhone. He's just like, wow. And he's surrounded by multicolored balls. And it's kind of an incredible shot. I had a big 8x10 frame for a very long time until he made me take it down because now he's a teenager.
Every time you and Scott talk about Mish being a teenager is wild to me because
I know because he's our baby.
Yes,
and now he's not. It's terrible.
It's nuts. What was your favorite age?
Oh, oof. Scott's gonna kill me because it was before Scott. I'm going to go with 28, but I could also go with 36.
Okay.
I'm going to straddle those two ages.
How come?
28 was, I was finally like, I was working steadily. I had a little less stress about working and I was like, really, I was in a good place. Just, I felt excited. I felt like things were going on the right track. And I just sort of remember feeling like I got out of a difficult relationship and I survived it somehow. And I was like, I'm still here and things are going okay. And then 36 is for sure. It was the first year of Misha's life. It was incredible. And I had everyone who I loved around me all the time. And it was really magical.
I love that. Before I ask you this last question, I have an additional one. What is your favorite thing you've ever written?
Oh. What is my favorite thing I've ever written? Oh, you know what? Yes, I have an answer. I wrote a show. Nothing ever came of it. But me and my wonderful dear friend, Anna Fricke, wrote a show called Happy Birthday, Avery Scott. And it's a sort of sliding doors idea about a woman, a 50-year-old woman, and sort of the life that she's living and all the various lives she could have lived. And we just had the best time writing it. And I love it. Like, it is something that I'll go back to and I'll still be, why did no one do this one? This one is so fun. I think that one.
Cool. Yeah. I love that. What are you a fan of?
Oh gosh, so many things. I'll give you a really weird one because no one will say this. And I hope one person watches it because this is just one thing I'm a fan of, but nobody's ever heard of it. Have you seen Fisk?
No.
Kim, that's my birthday present to you. It is the weirdest show from, I think it's Australia. I found it in after losing my mom. It came up, and I really think it was my mother shooting it to me through Netflix, saying, "Watch this show. You're just going to have a nice time," and and it made me laugh. And it's weird. It's sort of I can't say it's not like it's my favorite show that ever happened, but it's the first thing that comes to mind because no one has heard of it, and I'm thinking, why? It's really delightful, and this woman, everyone should know her. She's really funny. So go watch this.
Fisk. All right, cool.
F-I-S-K-E. There's two seasons, and I think they're making a third.
Awesome. Okay.
It's delightful.
Thank you.
Enjoy it.
I'm going to watch it. Where can people find you on social media? Do you want them to find you on social media?
No, I'm really not on social media. I'm off pretty much everything. I am on Instagram, but I rarely post, but I am on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a healthier way to be right now.
Yeah. I can't do all the things. I slowly got off everything and I miss nothing. And I have Instagram mostly for shopping.
I'm on all of them a little bit. I think it's kind of because I sort of have to be. And yeah. Then, you know, it's not good there. I don't know if you know this. I don't mean to blow your mind, but Twitter is really bad.
It seems bad. It seems like just a terrible, terrible place to exist. And I want no. And I also sort of try to model it for my son because I don't want him on it. So
yeah,
if I have no accounts and he has no accounts, then we're good.
I cannot imagine having to be a teenager right now.
No, same.
So
same.
Yeah. This was amazing.
Kim, thank you so much. This was so much fun. It was thank a real you. Lovely trip down memory lane. I am going to send you that messed up Barbie. So,
oh my God, please do. Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're looking for the show, it is on social media at Kim Moffitt is a fan on Instagram and TikTok. If you're looking for me, I am at Kim Moffitt on Instagram and Twitter and at Kim Moffitt is here on TikTok. And if you have a few minutes, please rate and review the show because it really does help people find new episodes. That's it. Thanks so much. Have a great week.